Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today, we welcome very special guests all the way from the United Kingdom, going by the Twitter handle TulipR. Tulip is here to share his story as a male detransitioner. From the ages of 26 to 34, Tulip has lived as a trans woman, including hormone therapy and full genital surgery in 2018. Tulip is active on Twitter and is running a D-Trans males group, which he started in April of this year. And that's where we'd like to begin. So welcome to Venus Rising.
Thank you so much, Carla. And thank you for having me. The D-Trans males group was founded and is mainly run by Limpida and the rest of us. It's mainly Limpida started it, and I would never want to take that away from him. But we do have a great working relationship. All the moderators are very fair and active, and it is very much a team effort, not rather than a one individual thing. So that's kind of my main message throughout this is I don't want it to be all like about one personality or anything like that. It's about all the individuals that bring it. Just before we went live there, we're talking about Helena, Grace, and Kat, and these are all very well-spoken individuals, but they all have their own unique little slant, and this is why you need the variety rather than just one person leading the charge, which is why in the group especially, we're very keen for those who wish to speak out to support those who spoke out. I'm not sure if you saw, but just yesterday, a young guy called Jaden made a post which has kind of really took off. It's like 10,000, like it's really, really booming. I don't want to say who he is, but he's been around the D-trans scene as well. And it's great to have him on board as well. And there's loads of faces that have been around, but basically it was just them. And it was like, I can't imagine doing this by myself. I really couldn't. And no one can, because it's such an immense weight. You're dealing with so many different things, your issues, the people's issues who are coming to you, all the complex issues that arise from that as well. And often it can feel like you're carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders. But with this, it's like distributed really evenly. And if you need to step back, you know for certain somebody will pick it up. And that's the beauty of the whole, these groups, like not just the male D-trans group, the D-trans groups, which are, so you've got the male group, which is a new one, the D-trans male Discord, and that's pumping at the minute. We've got lots of people in that. And then you've got the Reddit D-trans, which is the main source of support internationally. And I really do want to give a shout out to the moderators who have really, really like, there's been a great deal of personal sacrifice going in that to keep that up and running. And it has definitely taken its toll on people in the past, but that Reddit itself and the Discord community attached is helping hundreds of people in a way that we didn't have before. We didn't have this platform, and it wasn't just a platform where it was an echo chamber, and they tried so hard to make it not an echo chamber, whereas the D-Trans Males Discord is more of a recovery support group. So, you know, it can be a little bit more strict in there. In terms of how we approach things, but it's done very compassionately. Mm-hmm. And it is a very, very warm group as well. And we are making real change. You've got people in that group who are committing to, how should we say, like a public face and presence. You've got people who are taking legal action. You've got people who are just want to sit there and like be part of the group, and they don't want any of that. But whatever you want to do, we'll all support each other.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tulip, do you mind backing up just a little bit? And yeah. Some listeners that I know may not know what a Discord group is or what D-trans might even be. These are new terms for them. And can you kind of talk about maybe come up with like a fictitious person, like Captain C, who and talk his way through like how he might find your group or why he might want to join your group.
I'll tell you my story.
Okay.
That'll be better.
If you feel comfortable, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. That'll be fine. So first of all, Discord is an internet chat relay system. Imagine WhatsApp, right?
Okay.
But on the internet, essentially. That's the basic explanation. But it's, you know, you can go into channels and stuff. And it allows you to have video calls. It allows you to have different chat channels. And it's basically a communication platform. And it's very important that we're embedded on the likes of, say, Discord and Reddit, because this is where a lot of trans people are anyway. So it makes sense for, because I've been using Discord, surprisingly, for a lot of years, and Reddit for a lot of years. I'm such a cliche. So it makes sense to have it orientated on those platforms.
Sure.
And we'll hope it lasts, because the rules in Discord are getting more and more strict, and we are on the lookout for terms of service violations, because you're not allowed to say certain words, you know what I mean? And it's getting more and more likely that groups like us may need to look at other options in the future. So detrans, so what does that mean? That means essentially disengaging from the belief that led me to transition, that I had gender dysphoria, that I was essentially a woman trapped in a man's body, right? It's disengaging from that belief. And what it's doing is it's not saying, no, that's not real at all, and no one else experiences that. For me, it was saying that my issues were much, much more like all the bits that attributed to being trans in itself could have been symptoms and were and are symptoms of a great variety of different things. So there's attachment, there's bullying, there's personality disorders, which is really common in the trans community as well. And there's a reason those develop. You've got people on the spectrum, on all sides. You've got severe OCD and anxiety, people not fitting in. You've also got people with androgen insensitivity syndromes, like some intersex variations as well. But for instance, say the more common ones like Klinefelter's, which is about 1 in 500 boys. What that does is that causes a delayed puberty, normally wider hips. But when you do go through puberty, you're normally really tall. I'm not saying I have Klinefelter's, but using that as an example. And that can induce feelings of feeling different from your peers. So I believed I was trans, because it's not that I don't believe that I wasn't trans. It's very complicated, and I hope to get into that. But I disengaged from the belief that that's all it was, I would say, from quite early on. But the permission was given to me last year, because I'm a permission seeking person. And I'll try work on that, but I'm always outsourcing my opinion. And this is very common in the trans community, because there's a lot of how do I look, or what should I do, or how can I pass better, and you know, all these sort of things. It's always like, in the guise of support, but what you're actually doing is you're outsourcing all your opinions. And I went a bit on a little bit of a tangent there.
No, it's okay. It's good. We had Rachel. She was, she had transitioned to male and is back to identifying as her true self.
My belief is I never transitioned to female and back to male. I was always male.
Right. Okay.
So that the belief before was I could transition to female if I did surgeries in HRT, because I would have those characteristics. I'd be like a trans female, which is an odd thing. But detransition to me is disengaging from that belief. There is no one way to be detrans. You don't have to stop your HRT and take testosterone if you've had been gonorrhea, which means you've lost your gonads. There's no rules that you have to change your name back to your birth name and start wearing a suit and grow out a mustache and act like a dude. I mean, look at me for a start. I'm embracing that sort of just dress how I want and not really worry if I come across a certain way. It's just that belief that, yeah, it is, because it is very belief orientated, because that belief will dominate your entire interactions, how you view the world, how you view senses of danger, because there's always that belief that your life is at risk, either by your own hand because of society, never not because of you, and the risk from others because of transphobia and stuff like that, which is why, like, the whole sort of you're killing us, like, you know, you're promoting violence and all this sort of thing. Words are violence because it all leads to this. And you live your life, no matter how well you blend in, worrying about these things. At least I did, because I've got a very obsessive brain. So obsess and obsess about things like that. So I first learned about detransition and what detransition was last year in 2021. And I did not take it well at all. I thought because I was trans still, and I've been wrestling with it ever since that surgery and even before surgery. I found an old forum post from 2015 where I was expressing all my doubt, and I just got pulled back by other trans people on it. I started an article on it, but it's really exhausting to write some of these things because you're kind of reliving it in a way. And because I think if I'd came across detrans in 2015, I would have desisted it would have been detransitioned because I was on hormones at that point. So just to clarify, desisted means that people who identify as trans but didn't take any medical interventions, whereas detransitioned is people who took medical interventions and are now seeking to reverse that, which is, if you've had certain surgeries, impossible, I'm afraid, for great variety of people. Some people will opt for the male side of things when they detransition. They might want to get the buds taken out of the chest, because even with testosterone and lots of weight stuff, you'll still have that forever. Some people have had implants and they want them taken out. That's fine. For me, I'm now no more surgeries. I'm done being an experiment, just because I don't want it to be viewed like, oh, they've detransitioned, so we can just medicalize them again and benefit from that. I'm like, I'm done with this train. I want to go. I've got a meeting with my endo tomorrow, actually. For the first time ever in 10 years, he's been doing me bloods. And this will be the first time I get me, because I've been complaining very hard about this. And this is one of the things to say with the detrans advocacy. It benefits not just detransitioners, but trans people too, because the healthcare is shocking. Like, go on, just leave me alone sort of thing. Don't want to talk to you. So when I'd found this detrans stuff last year and I was wrestling a lot of stuff, I thought it was some sort of, because I was very much a believer as well. You've got to keep in mind, very, very much believed in the whole movement and trans lives matter and all that sort of malark. I wasn't front facing cringe, but I was definitely propelling the message, she would say. And I think that's why a lot of people who are front-facing detransitioners are front-facing for a reason, because I think they were also front-facing when they were trans. And there's that like collective guilt of how many people did I influence to transition? And I know for a fact there's been people added 100%, because that's how trans people essentially reproduce, that groom other trans people, whether that's into delaying their doubt away from them, or that's, you know, keeping them affirmed or whatever. Everyone's affirming each other. No one wants to pop that bubble. So when I saw this detrans awareness thing last year, I was like, that's a troll. That's just against trans people. And I was raging. I was absolutely raging. And then about, I don't know, because that would have been about March 2021. And I think towards autumn-ish, at the time, I was really messy because I wasn't in a great place last year. It was definitely the back end of 2021 when I was like, okay, I'll have a look at it and see what it's about. And then I started reading it and I got really angry because I recognized myself in the stories. And then I saw Shanid's video, Ramblings of a Detrans Woman. That was the first video I ever saw. And I was like, oh, you're allowed to be angry about this. What? And then I was on the Detrans Reddit. I'd found the Detrans Reddit. I'd made one or two posts under different handles. I was really like scared. Mm-hmm. It's gone now, this fear, by the way. Obviously, because I'm front facing now. Right. I was terrified somebody in my life would find us. I was terrified I would lose my job. I was terrified of so many. Like, I was terrified of the repercussions of even just showing me face or even having my words. And it was such a paranoid sort of semi-narcissistic fear in a way that somebody's going to be looking for me in that sense, you know, and it's totally unreasonable. But this is like part of the paranoia of being trans is it makes you catastrophize. And that's part of the OCD stuff as well, because a lot of us have OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, which can be extremely debilitating, and ruminations, intrusive thoughts, repetitive thinking. So anyway.
But what made you at least engage in that? Like, because you said that you didn't want to look at, but what, was there something in your mind that was either curious, or were you doubting what you were going through? Were you having, what was kind of your turning part, so to speak, to want to engage in the detransitioning movement?
So I'd been doubting for a lot of years, and I'd also, and it was just, it's tragic actually, because I was always facing like a doubt, and I'd always get reaffirmed either by, I was getting aggressively affirmed in therapy, by the way, aggressively. I had like 100 gender therapy sessions from 2015 to 2020, where all doubts were managed. So every time I tried to leave, I was getting pulled back in. Everything was because of cis sexism, which I don't know if you know about cis sexism, but you've got it. I'm afraid to tell you. it's like, you know, it's crazy. Anyway, but everything was sort of handled by that, like any fear and doubt. But I'd expressed it online. I got reaffirmed. I expressed it with the doctors and the medical professions. And it was just like, you know, this is all part of this. And it was very hard. But I was also a true believer as well. I'd go through dips, and this is quite common, actually. You go through intense periods of belief, and then you come out of it, and you're like in your doubting stage, and it's in the doubting stage that people will pull you back in. Whereas when you're in the, I believe, you are pulling others back in. So it's a sort of like people are constantly pulling each other back in, no matter where they are. And that's exactly what I felt was happening. So when I saw, because when you're trans and when you have surgery and when you take HRT, you think that's it for life. Because before surgery, I said to myself, if I don't do this, then I'm going to detransition, and I don't want to detransition because I don't want to go back. Because in my head, detransition was going back. But the reality is you're not going to go back mentally at all. Like, you're not going to undo what you've learned. You're not going to undo, because there have been benefits for me, but it was just a high cost for those benefits. It was crazy, the cost that I paid. But and then it was something that I could have attained elsewhere retrospectively with medical help, because I was not okay. And sorry, I just caught up in a little ramble there. So I was very angry about originally the fact that this had came out, and then I'd soothed down in about autumn winter time, and I realized that it was actually a possibility. Because before, I thought if you detransition, you're going to go back, but that's not what happens, is it? I thought you would just go back to that misery, because that's instantly what you think. But the truth is, there is no going back physically, obviously, but mentally, what are you going to do? Undo 10 years of learning? I don't think so. That's not going to just go away. It's like I've got a perspective now that is rather unique, because I've kind of seen both sides in a way, and being in those circles and stuff in a way that others won't. And there is a very unique power to that too. But I was very much again in that angered state. And then I'd realized it was a possibility, because I thought if you stay as trans or kill yourself, they're your options. And I didn't want to be a martyr for anyone. I was so angry at the sense that I felt that way. And I was so angry, like, you know what, if I was to take my own life, right? People who I didn't even know, or people who would claim that they were my best friend, and I've seen this happen, and I've seen this play out, and it's really weird. You get people who weren't even involved in their lives claiming the grief. Fuck it. I'm pretty sure I even did it at one point. Everyone's done it when they're trans. It's like the sort of, woe me. It reeks of like narcissism in a way. And obsession, the obsession with death. And when I realized that actually detransition isn't this thing, I just saw Shanice's video, and then I joined the Reddit, And then I was lurking, which means you're just reading, but not posting. And I was reading and reading and reading. And then I just had that, ah, shit, I need to join this Discord. So I joined the Discord from the Reddit. There's a link on there. And I'd originally put me like titles like trans and stuff. And I was very much like, I wanted to disengage, but I was in that permission seeking. And then the more I talked, the more I heard from people, and that they were immensely helpful in being balanced. Because when I went in there, I was expecting a space where I could be a little bit edgy and shit, but it wasn't tolerated at all. It was like, no nonsense. This isn't an echo chamber.
Yeah.
And it was like, you're not coming here to be transphobic, you're not coming here to be whatever, you're here for detransition support. We're not going to be ideologically driven either way. And that balance was critical, like critical to me, because it brought us away from that extreme view. And I know people may argue, well, haven't you went the other way? And I haven't. It's that it gives you that critical aspect of there will be people who are going to be generally happier being in transition for various different reasons. It could be because the issues that they may need to confront are so severe, or it could be a lifelong hormonal issue that's led them to severe dysphoria. And that can't be corrected either, for instance. Yeah, who knows? I'm not saying that there is and isn't true trans people, that because I don't believe in that as a concept anyway. What I do believe is there are people who benefit from transition, but it's been oversold. It's like PPI. Did you ever have that in your country?
I don't think so.
Oh, God. In the UK, for instance, right? So for US listeners, it was called Payment Protection Insurance. And it was sold on mortgages. It was sold on loans.
Oh, yes. We have that on like house mortgage. Yes.
So big, huge scam, massively oversold. And for years we've had, were you sold PPI and all this sort of thing? And I think that's kind of where we're at. It's like everyone's been sold it when they didn't need it. Mm. And it was like, actually, what would have benefited me a lot would have been a referral for ADHD autism diagnosis, which I'm still like, I'm an adult now, so that's not going to make a difference to us. But at that time, as a young adult, it would have made the world a difference to us. Mm-hmm. Treatment for the OCD, treatment for the severe depression. Like, and I'm talking like, a proper psychoanalyst for a year or two or whatever, or exploratively, I can always get it wrong, exploratory therapy, anything to just deal with the issues rather than just go, and me telling them when I was in a state of clear sort of disarray to say, this is my problem. This is how I want to treat me now. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, yeah, okay. And then I'm actually just going, actually, you know what? I've thought about it. I don't think this is right. No, you're right. You're right. This is just your doubt speaking. So that is the pathway into the how I got the detransition stuff. And then as a few months went on, March this year, I was like, I was originally going to do it in January, but that was too early. It was way too early. And then in March, I started speaking on Twitter. And then obviously I got built up following. And then in April, I'd socially detransitioned and told everyone. I'd changed my name, everything, and told everyone. Well, I just told my mum. I didn't make a... I told my friends, obviously, and me, and people who needed to know and work and stuff. And my documents are still on board. It's so weird. Like, detransition, I thought would have been a similar case going back to my old name, but it feels harder for some reason to like, detransition. And the journey in detransition has just been crazy medically as well.
I've had... Do you have medical support this way? Like, when did the medical professional team maybe get on your side or start listening to you?
It's ongoing, should we say. I was asking for months and months to see me endocrinologist and just refused point blank to see us. And then I just basically said, I want another endo. And then I was just saying, I'm going to complain about this, by the way, because he was being a right dick in the letters and stuff, like being really right sarcastic. and he wanted to refer us back to the gender clinic. Bear in mind, I got discharged from the gender clinic in 2020. And all I want is support for, I just want to start a little bit of testosterone, but I don't want to like jack up on T. I don't want any more radical changes. I've had surgery, and one of my biggest fears is internal hair growth in the neovagina, which will happen. And I'm like, oh, I'm not dealing with that. I refuse to deal with that. That is a horror that I just physically can't live through. And it was like, but I want to be healthy at the same time. There must be a course of action and stuff. And it's just finding the right stuff that works. And there are a few other issues. And fortunately, I've got a meeting with them tomorrow. And in the appointment letter, they describe the department as new, meaning in 10 years of treatment, I'll be the first time that I've ever seen me endo. Wow. And it's crazy. It shouldn't be like that. You like, and the thing that really, really ticked us off is I told my doctor I didn't want to go back to the gender clinic because that obviously hasn't helped. And they've been insistent on trying to refer us, but they've been respectful and didn't refer us. So my doctor was like, okay, we'll respect that. But in their sort of communications with the endocrinologist, because what happens is I got my doctor, they talk to them, and then they talk to the endo. So it's like them, the middleman, as it were. Mm-hmm. So in the UK, your doctor, your GP is like the head person of all your care. Right. Like everything goes through them. So I was talking to my doctor was talking to the endo.
Mm-hmm. The endocrinologist, that's the person that helps with hormone therapy, puts you on.
Yeah.
Just for people listening.
Yeah. So the endo was coming back and saying, you need to go back to the gender clinic. I'm not a gender specialist. And I was like, I don't need to go to the gender clinic. I need an endocrinologist. You're one. And he was like, okay, whatever. And we're having these like to and froms. And then all of a sudden, like just last week, like I got a letter from the gender clinic saying, we know you didn't want to have our involvement, but we got copied into a letter from your endocrinologist and we want to speak to you about your experiences and stuff. And they will get feedback. Believe me, they're going to get feedback and I am planning feedback for them. But it just felt so invasive at a time that I don't want their involvement. And they're writing to me for feedback. And
I'm like, still trying to get involved.
Yes. And it was like, you know, they're really desperately trying to send us back to church. That's how it feels. Mm. Right. And I called them up because I was a bit annoyed at this letter. I was like, why have you sent me this? And it was just like, oh, we're not referring you back. We just got copied in and we want to make sure we're doing it right and all this sort of thing. And I was like, oh, do you have endocrinologists at the gender clinic? And she said, no, your endocrinologist who referred you here does all our endocrinology for all patients in this region. So you're looking at about, maybe 2,000 people, roughly. Wow.
One physician.
Just wow. And that physician, I will be the first person to meet.
Wow.
Because I complained like hell and I raised hell. I've been raising hell. If anyone's been watching me Twitter, I have been raising hell. And I think they're watching.
That reminds me, I want people to know they can find you on Twitter with the handle TulipR, and that is TulipR. And how can people find, let's say we have a listener who's interested in desisting or detransition, where can they find you besides the Reddit group? What about the males group? Where can they find that?
We do invite only because it's.
I was going to ask about that. How you keep trollers from out of your groups that seem so intimate and so important?
Normally, what we do is we'll have a private conversation with them over text, and we'll have an optional voice video first meeting. Not everyone wants to do that, and we'll understand. But it does help with gauge intentions. And then what we tend to do is we'll let them know what the rules are. Mm-hmm. Again, in private message, because again, the rules are a little bit more strict, I would say, but it's a support group. Imagine like allowing drugs in like a rehab clinic, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean? Exactly, right? So when we're satisfied that that person is legitimate, they would just send them a link. But it's, we've only had one or two bad, really like trolls, basically. But most people, most trans people want to ignore us. Like they'll prefer that we didn't. We're getting to the point where they can't be ignored because they've ignored was less than 1%, which is painfully ironic to me because aren't trans people less than 1%? And it's like, we need to ignore these. This isn't a real sample. It's less than 1%. And I'm like, hang on.
You're also one.
Exactly. And it's like, that is a shit argument and it's an on goal. And now it's to the point where, so what the first do is they try to dismiss you. And when they can't dismiss you, they will try and argue against it. Oh, well, you're not really trans. You don't really represent us. And then after that, it's just full on like attacks, you know, your gender crit. I'm being quoted by like gender critical hot takes or whatever the shit handle is. I get added to Twitter lists all the time. Like, and this is really ironic to me, making a list called Nazis and then adding people to that list. And it's like, you realize what they did was make lists. And it's just like, you just, it's just crazy. Like they can't see what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's horrible. It's painful. And it's like, anyway, but they do try and come through and they say lots of awful shit to people and that gets a lot of people down. But what I want people to understand is I've been using the internet for 25 years and I've probably said more horrible shit than you can ever come up with. And I know it's a horrible thing to say, but I was extreme at one point. Mm-hmm. I was definitely radicalized when I was a teenager online. I was totally like in deep. And by that, I mean, I was, because I wasn't a well person, I believed all sorts of conspiracy theories as well. Yeah. Sorry, it looked like you were about to ask a question.
No, I was going to ask if, just because I want to be respectful of time, but I wanted to ask, you know, if someone was listening, what would you say to them? You know, because you're, besides, I know you have a lot that you say on Twitter, but if someone was listening to this and you were, you know, facing the camera, what would you say to someone who might be going through transition or doubting their transition or curious about it? What would you want to say to them?
The most essential things, in my opinion, is if you really want to find the answers, you need to disconnect from the internet for a few months. You need to come off the internet. You need to start walking outside. You need to find nature and whatever it is. And you need to get back to roots. And you, what you need to do is help break the obsession, because this is an obsession, right? When you obsess about your gender, are you trans? Are you not trans? That is an obsession. And the important part of disengaging from the internet is to stop fueling it and to remind you what's real. Because when you realize what's real in the world, you'll realize what's real within you and how you feel. And then what I would say after that is, once you've done that, if you're still obsessing, expand on gender dysphoria, because it's like explaining all breathing issues as breathing issues. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, whatever you have, oh, you've got a breathing issue. That's a sign of a breathing issue. That's a sign of a breathing issue. But as you know, there's a difference. You could have anxiety, which is physically induced, but it's not because you lack the organ. There's a problem with your organs. It's a neurological issue that you have there. Whereas, say, lung cancer is most definitely a disease that impacts your lungs. But to say that they're the same thing under breathing issues is bland. That's what gender dysphoria is, right? It's bland. Let's go through the symptoms, which I know of by heart, unfortunately. On the National Health Service website in the UK, they go by unease and discomfort with your body, which teenager has never felt that. Who going through puberty has felt totally like, oh, all these changes
this
are great.
This is perfect. I'm loving it.
I'm loving it. I've got no issues with this. I've got no hormonal problems. And then you introduce that concept, even to somebody in their 20s, late 20s, that feeling can persist. It's like, it doesn't just go away. So people in their 20s are just as susceptible as teenagers and children, even more so. And telling kids before they go through puberty that this is what this means sets them up instantly, doesn't it? if you like girl things, that must mean you're a girl. If you like hanging out with girls, that must mean you're a girl. It's just like we've went from trans is this beautiful thing about expanding gender stereotypes to this is actually what gender means. If you do this, you're a woman. If you do this, you're a man. And it's like, hang on, I thought we were escaping that. Right. I thought we wanted to come out of this whole sort of gendered language, but that's exactly the opposite of what's happened. I mean, look at the terminology, male and female, female and male. And it's like, I reject using terminology like that, especially male to female to male, because that indicates that I went to female and now I'm back to male. The reality was I was always male and I'm estrogenized, you know. You could say I'm even medically artificially intersexed because of it, you know. It's like I was never female. And despite surgery, that doesn't make me female either, because that's right. The caricature of a female organ. So anyway, back to tangents, I told you.
No, that's an important point. I'm glad that you went on that tangent, because it's hard, I think, for people who aren't in that all the time to articulate that. But I had a really interesting call with someone about that. And, you know, no, they never transitioned to female. They've always been male. And earlier, I think even on the show, I get caught up in that kind of word, you know. Yeah. And so I appreciate that. That's a really important point. So I'm grateful for your tangents. You bring up good points.
Thank you. So, you know, you've got your unease of body, and then you've got depression and anxiety. Wow. I mean, come on. How many people have depression and anxiety for good reason, right? Mm-hmm. The other symptom is feeling like you can't fit in. Wow.
Another large portion of the population.
Wow. Like even people who fit in feel like they don't fit in, you know? And another one is taking unnecessary risks. I mean, I went through surgery, so there you go. But even before that, risk taking itself is not something that just naturally arises. It arises from low self-worth, low self-esteem, mm-hmm. low confidence. And it's that desire also to feel powerful, to feel in control, and to feel indestructible, which are all sort of narcissistic tendencies too, because we'll talk about narcissism is very prevalent in the trans community. It's like a major, major thing. And this is something I'm personally been working on for a lot of years, and I still continue to work on it. I'm not a narcissist. I definitely have strong tendencies though. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like everyone does, but these are things that I try and manage. And I think the only way to, and I want to be open about that, you know? There's a reason trans people put themselves all over TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and, you know, even there's a degree of narcissism to detrans people for that, especially the ones who are front facing. I'm not calling all detrans people narcissistic, but I do not want that hot take coming out. But for the males, certainly, yeah, there's definitely that element. And I think in a way, it's kind of like fighting that, using that whole thing and then turn it in on its head. It takes one to beat one, in a way, as it were. So the other symptoms, let's say, so we've done unease with body, with depression, anxiety, we've done taking risks, low self-esteem and lack of self-worth, which let's talk about why people have low self-esteem. So that can happen from being in environments that could be chaotic, that could be disruptive. There could have been an early divorce. Mm-hmm. There could have been an early bereavement. There could have been something really traumatic. And they're like, I was talking to someone who, when they were 5, they watched their best friend die in front of them. And it was just like, and their best friend was a girl and they were an MTF. And then from like, when I unpack their story from all that way, you could see how the things pave the way. And it's like, you know, I don't think anyone's born with gender dysphoria. Like, I don't think anyone's born with anorexia. I think it's like, it's developed, it's environmental. It may be influenced and informed by hormonal disorders, which certainly will impact your environment and how people see you and how people react to you. But for the most part, is induced by upbringing and the idea and the obsession, and it is fueled by the internet. Because you've got constant access to your obsession, haven't you? In a way we never had before, which is why in 2014 and 2015, we saw the Tumblr boom, which for people who don't know what that is, Tumblr is a social media platform which became very, very popular with, you know, like social justice and the trans movement particularly. And that's where a lot of largely female and males hung out. I think the split was like 70-30 in the end of it. So about 70% of the users in trans Tumblr were FTM, female and male, even though I don't use the language, but it's their language, you know, what else? And sorry, that was one of the, that's when it really exploded, because the ideas and the obsessions were being fueled and affirmed by others. And now obviously you've got TikTok, Instagram, and so many other social media platforms. It is literally everywhere.
Yeah. A lot of the moms in our video talked in our video transmission, what's the rush to reassign gender, when they were talking about their children kind of having these thoughts and doubts and having gender dysphoria, or thinking they had gender dysphoria. A lot of it was so much time on the internet and how they were just getting reaffirmed through other TikTokers and how this like kind of contagion that's kind of sweeping through internet access and app access. So you are in a unique situation in that you've been there. So you know how to best support people who are needing their support. How do people who haven't been there, who don't know what it's like, how can we best support people who are experiencing?
So I think what's important for people who are supporting is that you make sure that you direct them to the right resources. There's like, you know, you've got life detransitions, you've got detrans awareness, you've got GenSpect. You've got all these organizations which are accumulating really good resources, and they have, we're in the building block stages of building those foundations, like really are building something wonderful going forward, because it is globally focused. But if you're at the very, very start of it yourself, and you are, sorry, for the supporter side, the resources on GenSpect, and also be a passive observer, but be reluctant to give your own sort of views on gender and stuff, because a lot of people are, you know, we don't want another echo chamber. I think some people, the ones who want to speak out will, and the ones who want to be in contact with groups like supporters and allies, you'll probably see them on Twitter, you know, I don't even have a Facebook, but it's Twitter where these discussions are really happening. And that's your best source if you want to like engage with a detransitioner. There's also on Reddit, ask_detransition, which is a subreddit the Reddit moderator team created, the detrans moderator team, to send all the questions that were coming from people who weren't detrans, because the subreddit itself is for people questioning their own gender. But what happens is you get people who want to, they basically want to give their own hot take, right? Or their own opinion. And they've never desisted. They've never detransitioned.
Right. They have no idea what they're talking about.
And they're basically pretending to be a detransitioner so they can say this. And we're like, we don't want that. We just want you to basically go onto another subreddit and ask those stupid questions if you must. And I'm sorry, but it's like going into a support group. It's like, imagine like, a recovering, like Reddit Leaves, for instance. That's a great example. So Leaves, spelled like the tree, Leaves, is a community for people who want to give up smoking weed.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You wouldn't go into that community and then start asking like people who were like really bleeding the hearts out about how they've really struggled with this addiction, but the addiction's not taken seriously because there's so much positive culture around it, but it's ruined their life. And then somebody comes in with, yeah, but have you seen Harold and Kumar Get the Munchies? You know, and it's just like, it can be,
it's
really
insensitive.
And I mean, you know, I think listeners to this show and people who do support aren't going to be insensitive by nature anyway, so I don't think it's worth like preaching to the choir. All I would say is thank you for your support and boost DTrans voices and messages, not just mine, but everyone, anyone, if they are legit and verified, because there will be people who will be like coming in on the scene, she would say, with malintent. But for the vast, vast majority, if not nearly 100%, especially on Twitter, you've got a lot of legitimate voices that are keen to speak out. So boost them, retweet them, make sure, you know, invite them to stuff like this. Like, it was my pleasure to get invited to your podcast, Carl. I was like, yeah, I'll be happy to do that, get the message out. But the important thing is we don't turn into like this worshiping of just one or two individuals. Sure. It needs to be like, we need to get the message out there that detransition is possible. Mm-hmm. You're not going to go back. And if you've changed your body medically, like I have, you're going to be living with this for the rest of your life, unfortunately. But that doesn't mean you have to live as trans doing that. There are other ways. You can live a happy life even after all these things. You know, you're not stuck, because that's how I felt. I felt stuck as being trans. I felt stuck in that identity, which was so tired of waking up every day and doing the voice, because I did voice exercises so I could sound. I'm not going to do it now, but I could do the voice exercises. I mean, when my hair was long, and I mean, even now people like still are a little bit chipper. I read mail most of the time. I know I've got a emo BST haircut, whatever, but I don't care. I like it. But for the most part, I'm not like afraid of my maleness in the way I was before. Like, I was afraid of any hint of masculinity like shown. Whereas now I'm like, I don't care if I strut. I don't care if I like walk a bit wide-eyed or whatever, you know. It's just gone. It's all fizzled away. And it did feel like I was playing a role that I wasn't getting paid for. Yeah. And every day I was waking up so tired, so exhausted. Yeah. And when I spoke to the first D-trans man I spoke to, when he said that phrase to us, he said it with such, because he was recanting how he came to the realization, and he just said, I just can't do this anymore. And he said it was such like exhaustion and pain, and I felt it. Yeah. I felt it so hard. And I was like, oh my God, that is exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
And as I was waking up every day after that conversation, I just got more and more like, oh, this isn't going away. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to do it. Excuse for my
That's
language.
Okay.
I'm
so That's sorry. Okay. It's okay. Well, I'm grateful for you. And I thank you for being willing to come on a show with, you know, a stranger and that you met on Twitter. And I really do appreciate it. And I appreciate your voice. I appreciate the things that you've said. It's been a privilege to have you on our show, and I'd like to have you back at some point if you'd be willing.
Definitely.
I think having 1 hour less is too less of time. Like I'm like, we gotta have some of these people back, and I would love to have you back. And so I want to say thank you so much for coming on the show and for taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, thank you very much, Carl. It's been a pleasure. I've loved having me little rambles and tangents this last hour.
We'll have more. Yeah, we'll have you back on the show, and we'll do more rambling. I like it.
I really, really look forward to it. Thank you so much.
I want to thank each and every listener and subscriber for listening in. We will include the links to Tulip's Twitter, as well as some of the groups that he talked about that are public that people can find resources at. So we want to thank you all for tuning in. Our goal, as ever, is to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and encourage you to think beyond the masses.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.